You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, welcome back to the second hour of Eye on the Ball here on Thursday afternoon, here on 10:30 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera. I'm your host. And on the phone now, we have former major leaguer, former Little League star, Ed Vosburgh. Ed, how are you?
Hey, doing well. How are you doing, buddy?
Fine, thank you. Let me, a trivia question, because I know you know the answer. You have to know the answer, because you're part of the answer, as Tom was asking earlier. How many people or players like you, Little League World Series, College World Series, Major League World Series, are there?
There's three. I was the first, then Jason Varitek with the Red Sox, and then the third one was Michael Conforta with the New York Mets. So
yeah.
Three of us.
Okay, so it was Michael Conforta from the Mets. So why do you think that's the case? Because obviously there's a lot of players in Little League, but it takes somebody special probably to get all the way through.
You got to be a little bit lucky. I think, you know, fortunately, we saw the Sunnyside team make this run, and they fell, you know, one game short, and they were phenomenal talent. I think it takes a little bit of luck, you know, and then to be in the College World Series, it's obviously it's a little different now. It's a lot more entailed. There's a lot more. I think they have to win a few more games now, and then obviously to make it to the Major League World Series is really difficult. So. A little luck, a little skill, I guess all those play into the factor of being able to be part of it.
Yeah, no question. I don't know if there's a list of how many kids played in the Little League World Series at the actual event in Williamsport and made it to the major leagues. Is that what we see here, Little League and Major League play? I guess 13 that played in the Little League World Series. 13 that played in the Little League World Series and made it to the World Series, big Major League World Series.
Wow.
Without the College World Series.
Yeah, that's a pretty small number. And, you know, again, it's just crazy. It's funny because I think about the Diamondbacks, their hitting coach right now is Darnell Coles, and Darnell Coles was the pitcher that I opposed my 12-year-old year when we lost in the regionals in San Bernardino. We were two games short of making it back to the World Series, and Darnell pitched against us. He actually was a decent pitcher, and his California team ended up beating Cactus Little League to advance.
So,
it's crazy how small world it is.
I didn't know that. So you were 11 when you went to the World Series?
Yes.
And you had a chance to go back again?
Yes. And, you know, we had a pretty good team. Tom Pagnozzi was on my 12-year-old team, Mark Carrion. So we had three major leaguers on that team, whereas my 11-year-old year, we had myself, and we had some kids that played college ball, David Meese, Kenny Merritt. But nobody had played in the big leagues besides myself. But my 12-year-old team, we had three guys, so... Yeah, we were a little bit unlucky then because we had you know, a little bit of sickness to deal with along the way. But it was definitely it was crazy. I still think it feels like it was yesterday and not, you know, what, 40 something years ago.
I was going to ask you, but it must have been. I know you've had some great experiences, college, pro, and life in general. But that when you're a kid, that's kind of, you'll never forget those times.
And I always tell people this whenever anybody asks me a question. I always say I remember more about Little League, especially that run that we had, than a lot of other different times in my life. I mean, I was lucky enough to play on eight teams that won championships in the minor leagues and then the big leagues. And, you know, my 97 Florida Marlins team, I got traded the following year to the Padres. We went to the World Series, although I was hurt. But, you know, it's crazy, but those Little League years, I remember so much about it. I don't know why, but it was just like a magical run that just is etched in my memory bank.
Mm-hmm. You must have played, back then it was single elimination, correct?
It was, and you know, obviously it's probably a little bit tougher. You know, you had to lose a game. You know, what I remember about that year, Steve, is I think the Taiwan team lost a game along the way. They played, I think, a double elimination somehow, whereas most of the other teams had lost or had to win all their games. So I believe that they lost the game. So can you imagine them losing to a team? Because they were pretty amazing. I mean, that kid that pitched against us in that final game, I mean, that was like we're facing Nolan Ryan that day.
And were there questions even back then that these kids were not 12?
You know, Ralph Lanick, who was our coach, he questioned it all along. And when he saw them, because he had coached Little League Baseball for 30 years, and he had seen many, many really good players. And when he saw the Taiwan team, he definitely thought something was not right. And he wouldn't even let us go watch them play. He saw them play all of their previous two games, and he was really adamant about not wanting us to see them because he didn't want us to be intimidated just because they were just so head and shoulders above better than anybody.
Right. No, but what a great time. I'm sure you still have a lot of the newspaper clippings, and I don't know if you have the show, the game on tape or whatever.
You know, we did get a copy of the game years later, and I do have it. And what's crazy, I just got out my jacket the other day, and I was showing my son Noah my Little League World Series jacket that I still have. It's still pretty much intact, and it's kind of cool. I wish we could have kept our uniform top, but we did get to keep our hats. But that was basically it along the way. We don't have a whole heck of a lot left from that memory except memories.
Right, which of course are great too. Great too when you're older.
Yes,
I'm sure those memories get embellished as you get older.
They do, and you know, it's funny because we watching that Sunnyside team, amazing run that they have. I mean, they faced that kid from California who they beat.
Yeah.
I think in the extra innings, that kid looked like he was 6 feet tall, 200 pounds. I mean, the kids nowadays, it seems like they're more athletic and you know, they just seem like they're bigger in general. But again, I would put our Little League team up against anybody. We had some talent, some pretty good pitching.
Yeah, no question. And you need all of that. You mentioned some great names, Pagnozzi and Carrion and guys like that. You know, back now, just going looking back, those were some big names.
You know, it was crazy. It's Tom Pagnozzi, who was our other pitcher, and he played second base. He never caught until I think he got way later on in his career, maybe even in college. I don't think he even caught in high school. He was a pitcher and an infielder, and so it's crazy. It's kind of like Ron Hassey, who obviously caught for the U of A and caught two perfect games in the major leagues. I think he didn't start catching till later on in his career as well.
Yeah. Let me ask you a dumb question. I don't think I've asked you this before, but you grew up here. You're a native. You're living here again. Who did you admire as a kid when you watched people play?
You know, Willie Mays was my idol. I loved the San Francisco Giants. They used to come in town and play at High Corbett Field, and the Giants were always my team. Willie McCovey, Willie Mays, Juan Marichal. That was the team. I loved playing the outfield myself. I wasn't left-handed, I couldn't play anywhere but the outfield or first base. So I did play a little bit of center field, and Willie Mays was my guy. I idolized that basket catch he used to have.
Right. What about locally though?
You know, I loved going to the U of A games. I remember when I was a kid, when I was in high school, I remember going to the U of A games and watching them play. And I remember Bob Horner coming through when he was at ASU and playing against the U of A. And, you know, it was a thrill because I was fortunate enough to play with Mark Wing, whose dad ended up being the pitching coach at the U of A for a long time, Jim Wing. And I had hopes of being an Arizona Wildcat, you know, from the very beginning. I when I was 12 years old and Coach Wing got that job, I thought, how awesome would it be to be a Wildcat and to stay in Tucson, be able to see family and friends, be able to see you play. So I had dreams of being, I was always a U of A follower. I always wanted to be a Wildcat.
Yeah, I don't want to pat your back, or I don't want, this is just a statement. What a great life. Just on sports side, you played Little League, you went to the College World Series, almost had a chance to go twice. You played at U of A, that was another dream of yours. You played pro ball, and then you played in the World Series. Not too many people get that chance, what you've done.
You know, I feel very blessed, and I really, that's one of my passions now is to inspire kids. I really love kids. I really believe that kids are our future, and thinking about how crazy our world is now with all these shootings that happen. Seems like every time you turn on the news, something happens. I really want to inspire kids to be great and to live up to the blessings that they've been given. Every kid, I believe, has a talent. And my hope is that every kid can reach the love and the passion that they have for something in their life. You know, it doesn't have to be sports. It could be anything. It could be a teacher, a fireman, a policeman, a doctor, a lawyer, whatever. I just think my passion was, you know, I love to be able to throw and hit the baseball, and I was very fortunate to be able to do it for a long time. And I hope that kids can realize they have something that they can really do, excel at, just be passionate about it.
Sure, sure. I know you couldn't make it to the party last night at Frog and Firkin, but they have an event on Saturday. I think it would be cool for you and for them to go show up and be introduced. You're kind of what they aspired to be.
You know what? It was great, Steve. I Mike Carrion, who was on my team as an 11-year-old, and his brother Mark was there, my 12-year-old year. Their dad, Camille, was an exceptional catcher. He played in the big leagues, and he inspired me. I didn't mention him, but he inspired me. He used to come to our practices, and he had a big influence on me because, you know, everybody looked up to anybody that had done anything in sports. And here we had a local guy who had played in the big leagues, and he taught me a lot about just how to throw the baseball properly, not necessarily really how to throw the baseball. And he was a big influence in my life, Mr. Carrion.
Yeah. So you're a 12-year-old, you're 11-year-old in the World Series, a 12-year-old with a chance to come back. At what point did you kind of realize you had something there?
You know, Mr. Lanik, who was our coach, he just pulled me aside one day and he whispered in my ear and he said, Hey, Eddie, he goes, I don't know if you realize this. He said, you have an ability that you could go a long way in this game. It's really going to be up to you, but you know, you have this ability, you could pitch, you could hit. And he put that in my ear and it went back in my memory bank. And I thought to myself, how awesome would it be to be a professional baseball player? So at probably age 11, you know, during that run that we had, that's really what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a Major League Baseball player.
Right. Not too many people get to live their dreams out. You did. And it's funny because you've told me this story on the show a time or two, how you credit Tommy Lasorda for kind of making it happen in a weird way.
You know, there's always going to be people along the way that doubt you and tell you that you can't do something. And you know what? I had a few people that told me along the way. Tommy, when I went to spring training with the Dodgers, had told me they cut me 2 days before the season was going to start. And he basically told me to my face I wasn't good enough. And you know what? I just said, Tommy, I respect your opinion, but I am, you know, I'm going to show you. And I basically kept my mouth shut most of my career, which I think helped me. But deep down inside, he motivated me. I wanted to prove him and other people along the way that I could do it. And, you know, we need something along the way. And I look at Brooks Koepka, the golfer, who really had to – he really wasn't a golden boy coming up like the Tiger Woods or Dustin Johnson or Ricky Fowler. And, you know, he had to work for everything he got. And it really makes everything sweeter along the way when you have to face adversity. Adversity really, you can learn a lot from adversity, a heck of a lot more than you learn from winning.
Yeah, no question. In fact, I can't remember if I've asked you. So once Lasorda told you this, did you ever face him again or see him again?
You know, what's a great story about that is I flew home a couple of days later. I got released and I called my agent and I told him what happened. And by the time I was in Vero Beach and by the time in Florida, by the time I landed in Tucson, he had got me another opportunity with the Texas Rangers. And he said, I got some good news, some bad news. He goes, I got some great news. I got you another job. The bad news is you got to pack your bags and you got to head right out. So I was home for about 12 hours, and I got on a plane the next day and flew into Louisville and joined the Texas Rangers AAA team. And fortunately enough, I pitched one time, and something happened in the big leagues like a day later, and I got called up to the big leagues. And I ended up running into Fred Clair, who was a general manager of the Dodgers, and it was really nice. He came up to me and said, you know, we were really wrong about you, and we should have given you more of an opportunity. And he goes, I want to congratulate you. You really proved us wrong. So that really made me feel good.
Yeah, no question. I bet you it did. And then you lasted a few years after that.
I did. That was, I'm trying to think, that was 94. That was the strike year. And I ended up playing until 2002, and then I decided that I'd had enough, and then I got right into coaching. And, you know, I managed to stretch it out for 21 years, which was a, you know, it was a heck of a lot of fun along the way, and a lot of ups and downs, but just a lot of great memories.
Yeah, in fact, when I covered the, when I was with the Citizen, I think I covered the Toros like in the late 80s, maybe early 90s. You were on the team for a bit, weren't you?
I was. I actually played in Tucson in 1988 with the Houston Astros, and you know, unfortunately had one of the worst years of my life and ended up getting traded later in that year to the, of all teams, the Los Angeles Dodgers, and went and played for Brent Strom, who was the pitching coach in Albuquerque. And Brent really, I credit him with really helping me. I was really not feeling good about myself. I struggled that year, and he helped me the last month or two of the season. And, you know, it really had helped me to work with another left-handed pitching coach like Brent, and he's a really smart guy, and obviously he's done really well with the Houston Astros.
Yeah. Can you have time to stick around for another segment?
I do.
Greg, we'll talk about maybe just growing up and maybe playing some more sports and things like that, but I have a quick question about kind of the end game for you and how that all played
okay.
out here
okay.
on 10th. Let's take a break, Tom, and come back here on 10:30 The Voice. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 10:30 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera, and on the phone we have former major leaguer pitcher Ed Vosburgh, big-time little league player back in the day. So let me ask you, so you're how old were you when you were near the end of your career?
I was 40.
40. So that's a great age in terms of you lasted that long. You had 18 years playing?
21 years.
21 years. So how was the end game for you?
You know, the end was tough. I think at the end, my last year when I was 40, I was with the Phillies, and I remember getting sent down. The Phillies made a trade, and they got Turk Wendell, and they got Dennis Cook from the Mets, and I got sent down because of it, and I was really discouraged. And I just remember, you know, I remember running into Ruben Amaro, who was the general manager, and I said, he was the assistant GM, and I said, Ruben, I'm really discouraged. I'm really thinking about retiring. And he goes, hey, just hang in there, you know, just don't make any decision quickly. And I didn't. I went home and thought about it. And I went back to AAA, and I just thought to myself, you know, is this really what I want to do? And I thought, you know, I missed being home. I missed family life. I missed Tucson. And I ended up, you know, sticking it out for that last, you know, month, and you know, I thought, that's not the way I want to go. I'm not going to quit. I've never quit anything in my life, and I stuck it out, and I was happy that I did that, but I just had enough. And then the following year, you know, I decided, I ran into Billy Beane, who was the assistant GM of the, or he was the GM of the A's, and he offered me a coaching job, so that's when I got right into coaching young kids.
Yeah, it's so, you know, I've done a few stories on this topic itself. I don't know if it applies to you, but I covered athletes good and bad, mostly very good, obviously, to the level that you played at. And life after the applause is always difficult for many of them. How was it for you?
You know, it was difficult. It was difficult. I missed the game. I missed the camaraderie with players. I didn't miss the travel. I didn't miss being away from family, but it was, you know, you're used to being in front of crowds and stuff, and it was an adjustment. But when you do it for 21 years and you know, doing it as a little leaguer and having, you know, some success from the very beginning, you know, I just thought it was time, and I really loved being around family and friends, and I missed that. So it was a transition, there's no doubt about it, but I felt like it's time, and I thought, you know, coaching would be a great, you know, transition for me, and it was. And I did it for a while. I still work with kids. I love kids. And, you know, I'll always have a heart for baseball. That's really, really, it's been really good to me. And, you know, I love it. It's hard for me to watch now, but I do love working with kids and try to inspire them.
Hey, Ed, this is Tom. One of the things that Steve likes to get into is the psychology that affects people, not only in sports, but in their life. And I was wondering, does the mental aspect of the game affect pitchers more than it does field players?
That's a great question, and I got a great answer for you. And one of the things that really was difficult, you know, as time went on, is people don't realize how much anxiety goes along with the job. I mean, I was a relief pitcher. I'd have to come in and face Bonds and Griffey and Rafael Palmeiro, and night after night after night. And you know, it wears on you. You know, when you have your job on the line every single day, and, you know, that's why I really enjoyed actually being a starting pitcher a little bit better, because you have 4 days in between. You can kind of relax. But as a reliever, it was exciting. But having to be ready every single day, it kind of wears on you. And that's one of the reasons I think I thought it was time to shut it down. You know, the mental aspect is definitely a big part of it.
Do you think it is sort of like being a field goal kicker in football?
Oh, my gosh. Exactly. Maybe not to that extent. But, you know, I would come in and with the bases loaded. And I remember one time I was fortunate enough to strike out Tony Gwynn late in the game. And I remember the reporter came up to me after the game and he said, well, what's it like to strike out Tony Gwynn? And I said, well, it's great, but I unfortunately I'm going to have to face him tomorrow night. We got another game. And so as it turns out, he comes up the next night in the eighth or ninth inning and hits a ground ball in the hole and game winning hit. And that's just the life of a reliever, is one day you're on top of the world, the next day you may give it up. So that's the beauty of it. And, you know, I was fortunate enough that I was able to turn the page a lot of times, and I didn't let, you know, negatives bother me. It maybe would bother me for a little bit, but I was able to go home and put it to rest.
As you got older, you had to become wiser and probably more crafty.
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And, you know, you learn little things about yourself, what you really can and can't do. And one of the things that helped me along the way is I love talking to hitters. I would sit and talk to – I ended up playing with Tony Gwynn, and I would sit and talk to Tony and pick his brain. And I learned more from other hitters than I did from talking to any pitchers, because they would tell me what's going through their mind, and it would really help me prepare for how to face them.
Yeah, yeah, no, makes sense, total sense. So you must have played, we talked a little about this morning, but you must have played as a kid, because kids our age back in the day played 2, 3, 4 sports.
Yeah, and I love that, and I really, I loved basketball. Basketball was probably my favorite. It probably wasn't as good as you know, throwing a football as a quarterback or obviously baseball. But I played football my whole career. Ed Doherty called me into his office when I was a senior in high school, and he said, why are you going to play football? You have a baseball career. He goes, aren't you worried about getting hurt? And I said, sir, no disrespect, but I love this game. I played it since I was 8. I said, I there's no way I could watch. And I loved other sports. And it makes me sad to see soccer players nowadays, 10 years old, playing nothing but soccer, or you see, you know, kids just specializing in one sport. Parents need to let kids have fun and take a little bit of break. And I think that's one of the reasons there's a lot of arm surgeries, is because kids are throwing way too many pitches early on.
Yeah, no, I think so too. I think kids need to be kids. I'm not the end all be all, but I think that's the whole thing. Enjoy the moment, because those moments are fleeting.
Exactly. And, you know, like these Sunnyside kids, I bet a lot of these kids from the Little League team, I bet they do other things. And it really helps you. You know, basketball helps with your endurance. It helps your footwork. You know, playing football helps you learn how to be tough and maybe play hurt. All these different sport. Plus, when baseball rolls around again, you're looking forward to playing it, because you miss it. You know, I don't think these parents realize that kids need to miss something so that they can, you know, keep that love going.
Yeah, no question. I guess that's what your message is, to play as much as you can until you can't.
I really believe it. I think it's the parents. I really wish they would listen to that and realize that, it's such a detriment to for kids to specialize early on. I think as you get into high school, you know, and I went to a meeting, you know, last night at Sabino High School because my son Noah is going to play basketball and baseball at Sabino. And, you know, and we went to the meeting and talked to the baseball coaches. And I think most of these kids are playing nothing but baseball. And, you know, at the bigger schools, I think it's really difficult maybe to play more than one sport. But I think that's why the beauty of the littler schools, the smaller capacity, where they can play other sports and they can have more fun.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And times have changed because I think the parents, and you're well aware of this because you have friends who are like this, I have friends like this, where their son's the next best thing since sliced bread, and they're going to be the guy that moves on and does a lot of things, scholarships and all that. And so most of the time, that's not realistic.
It's not, and I think that parents, I think one of the things that's killed Little League Baseball is club baseball because it's such a moneymaker and, you know, kids are playing all year round, and it's really hurt Little League because Little League doesn't have the same participation that it did years ago. And so many kids are playing club baseball or club sports that really they're not, you know, these coaches, they give the parents this fantasy like your kid's great. And yeah, they may be good, but you know, it's a moneymaker, and unfortunately, money has ruined a lot of things.
You obviously were not part of that because it was you were way ahead of that time.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, like I said, I was playing other sports, and you know, and it really made me appreciate baseball because baseball was something that I loved. It wasn't my favorite sport. I loved basketball. I loved playing golf in the summertime, but baseball was just something that I was, you know, decent at, and I was lucky enough to make a living at it.
Right. So now what keeps your mind, this is what I wanted to ask you, and you remember now, because you played sports for most of your life, if not all your life, how do you keep that thirst of competition going?
You know, it's funny because whenever I get together with family, we play cards. It's like I'm so competitive. I don't like to lose at cards. We play ping pong. I'm competitive. I don't like to lose at anything. And you know, I just think you're born with that, and I play in a golf league with a bunch of great guys, and we play for a little bit of money, not much, but, you know, it's just a competition, and that's one thing I do miss about the game of baseball is the competition every day and going out there and facing great hitters and trying to get them out, but, you know, competition is really, really where it's at, I think, for most athletes.
Yeah, I think if you have that competitive atmosphere or whatever that word is, you always have it, and you got to find a way to kind of kill it.
I think it's true. I think so many things we're born with. I think I was fortunate enough to be born with a love for sports, and it served me well. My son Noah has the same love of sports. My daughter Sophia is a great kid. She didn't have the same quite love of sports. She's really good at other things, but I think we're all born with certain things that you know, we're really good at, and it's just up to us to figure out what it is.
So let me ask you before you leave, and you got to come to this into the building to spend some time with me so we can put this on YouTube at some point. Got to get you out of that house.
Let's do it next time.
So let me ask you a couple quick questions. Who was the guy that was the toughest guy to get out? You probably already mentioned his name on the show. That's my guess. And who was the guy that you kind of know in your head or knew in your head that, you know, I got this guy?
You know, Barry was always a guy that I didn't want to face. Barry Bonds, I faced him at ASU, and I knew right away when he was a freshman at ASU he was going to be really good. I faced him as a Triple-A player in the PCL. He hit a home run off me, and I actually gave up a home run to him in the big leagues when he was with the Giants. You know, it's funny because I faced Eddie Murray a few times in my career, and I think I struck him out every time. But, you know, he was a switch hitter, and he was obviously probably a little better from the left side. But, you know, some guys you feel really comfortable facing, and then some guys like Barry. I didn't like Barry because Barry got right on top of the plate, and he didn't really give you anywhere to throw the ball. So he was a smart hitter, and obviously he was smart enough to hit 700 and some home runs, and who knows if he'll ever get in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, I thought you were going to say Tony Gwynn, to tell you the truth.
You know, Tony was really tough. I mean, he got one hit off me. I think I only faced him about five times, but I was really tickled that I was able to strike him out one time because
he never did. You know, yeah,
because Greg Maddux never struck him out in 100 at bats that he faced him.
Right, right. He never struck out. What a fantastic player he was. Hey, thanks, Eddie, for joining me. Appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure. Anytime you need me, call me.
Yes, I will. Thank you. Got to come in so we can do some YouTube.
Next time I'm coming in.
Okay, great. Thanks, Ed. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, that was Ed Vosburgh, former major leaguer, little league star, major league, not major league, college star. Good to talk to him, track him down. Let's take a break, our final break here. Tom, hey, that was a great question. You even got acknowledged for that great question.
Well, Guy, you know, you could have asked him that question.
No.
Because that's sort of your bailiwick, is the psychology of things.
No, but that was a good question. And especially the goal kicker one. It's true, because you come in for like that pressure situation.
Yeah.
If you fail, you're the goat. If you hit it, you're the hero.
The closer, as far as coming in, it's all on your shoulders to close out the game and preserve the win.
Yeah.
It's got to be tough.
Yeah. No, I bet it does. That's why they pay them the big bucks.
All right.
That's why I'm paying you to get us out of this segment here on 1030 The Voice. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. A little Arl Allen Parsons project for you. Good to talk to Ed, touch base with Ed, especially now that that Sunnyside Little League team had such a great run. Hey, this just in, the Cardinals scored a field goal. Now it's 26-10. It looks like Mr. Murray, the number one pick, has not fared well in this game against your Raiders.
Well, I'm trying to decide if it's because the game is faster than he's been able to manage it, or if maybe his offensive line is not picking up the Raiders' stunts and blitzes, so I don't know.
Or maybe it's just a bad day.
Maybe it's just a bad day.
But yeah, like you know, I always say, you can't be judged on one day. They can play well tomorrow, but it's not a good sign. They're at home playing these guys and not doing well.
But as we always say, it's the preseason.
It's the preseason, yes. Yawn. Who cares? As long as you don't get hurt.
But it's fun because it's football, you know.
Yes. Yes. I assume that's your favorite sport to watch.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, over the last few years, I have gotten kind of disenchanted, if not disinterested, in watching NFL.
Because of
mainly
the politics.
The politics. I enjoy watching college sports, football, basketball, baseball, women's softball, women's basketball. All of the college sports, I enjoy them better.
Yeah, I get it.
Guess it's more pure.
It's more
somehow.
Pure, and even then it's not real pure.
No, but it hasn't become politicized yet.
Right, not yet. Not in some places, yes. Not so much in other places.
Yeah.
You see that DeMarcus Cousins got hurt again. Now he's with the Lakers. He hurt his ACL. He'll probably be out for a while. Maybe the whole entire season. If there's a dude with bad luck, it's Mr. Cousins.
Yeah, and that is, as I understand, where he was in, where, Las Vegas? And he was in some sort of a pickup game or something?
I thought he was working out in Vegas in maybe. I thought he was working out in L.A.
Okay. So, in other words, it wasn't anything that was going to contribute to his upcoming season, apparently. It's just
Well, he's out for the likely out for the year.
ACL?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It doesn't say, or does it say, and Thursday confirmed, he got hurt yesterday, I think it was. And yeah, just a dude with some bad luck, you know? He's bad, some bad with the Golden State Warriors. Now this with the Lakers, his time might be done. He's only 29. I was working out in Las Vegas on Monday when he had to leave the court.
Working out?
Yeah, working out.
I think he was playing a pickup game. That's what I think.
Well, that happens. It happens in those things too, you know?
Yeah.
Especially when you've had injuries before.
Yeah.
Kind of prone to them.
You know, as you were saying when you were talking with Ed Vosburgh about the competitive nature of some folks, even in a pickup game, sometimes that competitiveness can get the better of you, and
or
you injure yourself or you injure somebody else.
Or you just land funny on a foot or something like that, and you miss something, just circumstances are bad, and it happens. you know.
It's a soap opera, Steve.
It's not always I articulate my words correctly.
That's how the basketball turns, or should we say the basketball bounces?
Yes, as the basketball turns. And it's not always I articulate my words accurately. Happens more than I wish it didn't. See what else is going on. I saw that.
Boy, he's had more than one injury.
Well, he's had a number of them just in the last few years.
Yeah.
I wish you would pay attention to me. You're neglecting my words, my talking.
Well, I know you said something about this was not his only injury. I'm just remarking on how many he's had. And it just seems in the last year and a half or so, he's had several injuries.
Yeah, no question. Once he left, was it New Orleans? That's where he was before? Can't remember where he was. Can't remember yesterday. Earnhardt and his wife survived a plane crash earlier today, looked like.
Yeah, apparently. They crashed on a highway or something. And were lucky there wasn't any traffic on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess it was just a small plane, you know.
Yeah, sure.
It was just him, his family, and the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
But serious injury.
Have you ever been in one of those small planes?
I have.
What was it for?
Bush planes in Alaska.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I've been out moose spotting.
Oh, really?
Flew across Cook Inlet to Lake Clark.
Look at you. You're like Forrest Gump. You have these stories. Oh, yeah, I have a fishing boat, and I went out. When he sits at the table there at the bench, well, yeah, and then I ran across the street, and I became an Alabama football player.
Yeah, I mean, you know, flying on a 30-year-old Taylor craft.
Yeah.
That the guy maintains himself.
Yeah, you're like, oh, what am I doing here? When I was a kid, I was in a few of those with my dad and his friends. It was cool, obviously, because you're a kid and you don't think that things could happen. But as an older adult now, I would think that, oh, holy crap, what am I doing?
Well, the thing is, once you get on the other side of the inlet, then you're in part of the Alaska Range, and you have to know your way around when you're trying to go through those passes,
mm-hmm.
or you get yourself caught in a Bucks Canyon, and you're in real trouble.
Did you see Russia from there?
No.
Like your former vice president candidate?
If you're on Little Diomede Island, you can see Big Diomede Island. Little Diomede is USA. Big Diomede is across the international dateline, and that's Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see Russia from U.S. shores if you're in the right place.
Yes. Miss Palin did that often, apparently.
Well, she wasn't lying.
No, I wasn't saying that. She just did. What else is going on? Football. I'm not sure I'm going to go to football practice. I think they're breaking right now, so I wouldn't be able to talk to anybody anyway. We have about, 9 days? 9 days left before the big game?
You're supposed to leave Wednesday?
Leave Wednesday. They're playing late.
So that's what, 6 days?
Late Saturday night.
Saturday, so 6, 7, 8, 9.
Huh? Yeah, we have the Loodles and Fantasy Camp coming up next week. We're excited about that.
When does U of A women's soccer start?
Good question. They're playing tomorrow, I think, in San Diego in a friendly, but I would assume maybe 2 weeks. I could be wrong.
Aren't we expecting good things from the team
this
year?
Yes, another. I'm going to try to get Coach Amato on here. He was here in November, I think it was, and I haven't had him on since, so. That might be another one of those teams. Remember I said make a prediction of what teams are going to do well? And I said women's basketball, idea, and then the women's golf team. And then I went with the third team, Arizona basketball, men's. And then probably the soccer team. That's a good pick.
And there's another question for you. The men's basketball team, we know they've been working out.
Yes.
Even though they won't let you come in and watch.
Right.
Or any of your fellow compatriots. What about the women's team? Are they working out yet? When do they get on the court?
I would assume so. You caught me mid-yawn.
Sorry.
That's all right. No, I would assume so. You don't hear much about it because they just don't write about it, but I assume that they're doing the same thing as the men.
But Adia seems to be a little more open to having you guys come over and chat with her about the team and maybe...
Yeah. Well, in fact, I just did a big story on her, a profile for Biz Tucson that's coming out here in about a week or two, and enjoyed spending some time with her talking about her success this year and what it all meant, and was she surprised by the craziness that went on? I think she just got a story, lightning in a bottle, perfect timing. The basketball team, the men's basketball team was down. The town needed someone to latch on to, and they found her. And she was very accommodating.
790-2040 is the number if you want to get in on the conversation or you want to bring up another
topic.
790-2040. Yes. So I would be interested in it. Why don't you get Adia on the show here in the next 2 or 3
yeah,
weeks?
Yeah, I will. I'll try.
I'd be interested to know, after their success with the women's NIT, how have things progressed since then? Any recruiting and things?
Yeah, okay. I had her on since then, but yeah, I mean, I don't think you were my guy then, before I switched over to the 5.
Well, we're getting closer to the next season, and I'm thinking they've got to be working out or at least getting close to practice.
Oh, sure. You already know that in about a month and a week, the Red-Blue game is already going to happen. They're going to do it in late September. First time ever this early. Then we're not going to see them for a month until the season starts. I think that's what they planned. They show them a glimpse and then, you know, tease them real quick and then give them nothing for a month.
So when in late September?
Yeah. I think I want to see the September 27th-ish. I could be wrong on that. But late September is the Red-Blue, and we'll see what happens from there.
So one of their first non-conference games?
I would assume November 10th-ish. That's just a guess, obviously.
They'll play, what, Chico State or...
Something like that.
Somebody like that.
Chico or Sideways State, one of those.
Not San Diego State?
Not San Diego. Probably that's not. That's a good game, actually.
That would be a good game, yeah.
Yeah.
I would think.
That's not part of your ticket plan, sir. Sorry. Too much. We have to raise prices on that ticket plan. So I'm sure you're very excited about Arizona basketball after what happened last year.
I'm hoping for... a better season than the last couple.
You and the rest of the fandom.
Yes. Yeah. And I know you could care less.
No, it's always good to cover a winner. Like I said, it's easier to cover a winner. But and I think they're going to win a lot this year, which is great. We'll see what happens. They have a great group. Obviously, Brandon Williams is not going to be playing. Another blow to the team. You know, started a while back, injuries. Ray Smith ended his career his first year.
But it presents opportunities for people like Max Hazard and Dutrieve.
Yes.
Debonair.
Yes. So capable guys.
Time, you know, here's your opportunity, guys, for a breakout season. And hopefully Brandon, you know, what is there any speculation that he might be back in time?
No.
For March Madness?
No. If he ain't going to play, he's out for the year.
All right.
Yeah, there's no even thinking that, probably.
It seems like that might have been a pretty serious surgery that he had to undergo with that congenital problem with his knee.
Yes, I agree.
Okay. I agree.
So why do you say that? Because you've been hearing stuff? I've been hearing stuff.
Well, I mean, if it was something that he was born with, and it's something that has been affecting the blood flow to part of the bone in his knee, for crying out loud, that sounds kind of serious to me.
Oh, yeah, sure, of course it is.
How do you rectify that? How do you get the blood flow back? Do you have to remove a portion of the bone? And if you do that, does it grow back? Or do you have to replace it with something? And, you know, I don't know. I don't know enough about it, but gosh. That sounds kind of severe, doesn't
Tom,
it?
Tom, you know I'm wearing headphones. I'm behind the mic. You know I'm not a doctor, right?
I'm not either.
I don't play one on TV. I can't
but
answer
my
your
brother,
questions.
But my brother Rob has undergone a couple of hip surgeries.
So how's that related?
He had to have one of his hip joints replaced. And I know what he's gone through with bone on bone and poor blood flow and all that kind of stuff. So... And it took him, I would say, 3 years before he started feeling right as far as being able to be mobile and getting around, you know. So I hope it's not that bad for poor Brandon. Hopefully not.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Is the score with the ESPN thing still the same? Your Raiders beating up on the... Cardinals.
Yeah, it's still 26-10, and they are...
You know why it hasn't changed?
Oh, they're at the halftime.
They haven't played for. It could be worse, but we're at halftime.
They're giving the Cardinals a break.
It's called waving the white flag.
Okay. well, you know, Momentum changes, Steve. So many times at half, you'll come out and the second half will be like a different game. The teams will look different, play different. And I know you don't believe that.
You know how I feel about momentum.
But, I know.
But under those circumstances, I'll agree with you. Yes, it does change. But what did you laugh about what Ed said? So there's something, momentum in psychology of the sport. There was something that you kind of gave me a look that said, you know, he's talking about something we talk about. Momentum and what are my things? Momentum and something else.
Luck.
I said there was the kids. The kids.
Yeah.
We were talking about kids. You gave me that weird look because I was talking about luck.
When he mentioned luck, I looked at you to see what your reaction was.
Well, because they didn't need luck. I mean, they beat everybody pretty badly in the state of Arizona. And then they went and they lost the first game to Hawaii. And then luck had nothing to do with it because they're that good.
Luck has nothing to do with 8 errors in one game.
Exactly. And you can't say you were unlucky. You just played badly. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So luck is a weird word. That and if. I never use the word if or try not to.
Because, but maybe a little luck in the last game against Hawaii could have helped.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a little. And they had them on the edge. I mean, Hawaii's good.
Yep.
They've been going to the World Series for a while now.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently, the team that's representing Hawaii now is from a different city.
Oh.
Is from what I'm reading earlier when I was on the ESPN, or no, I was on the Little League World Series website, and it indicated that they were from a different city than the team that won last year. Hawaii won the Little League World Series last year.
Won it?
That's my understanding.
Won? I thought they got, maybe I didn't pay attention or take notes then, because I do remember them doing very well. I didn't know they won it, given the toughness to win the whole thing. Given the foreign players, and there you go, hacking away. I hear you.
I know.
Hacking away.
I didn't want you to feel like I was deserting you.
No, you're not.
Let's see.
2018. Go to the right. You're right. It says World Series right there. Runner up South Seoul. So they didn't, right? Who won it?
Why doesn't it tell us?
It's right there.
Who's
right there.
This?
No, it doesn't. It might have
Honolulu
been,
advances to the U.S. Championship of the Little League.
Then they won because they beat Seoul.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then no wonder.
So it was Honolulu last year, and this year the team is from Walalike or something. It's another town in Hawaii, apparently.
I get it.
Okay.
Well, we're almost done.
It's time for us to bail.
Yeah, okay. Good show today. Thank you, Sunnyside, the Moragas, and thank you, Mr. Vosburgh, for sticking around for a long time. I'll see you tomorrow. I don't know what's going on tomorrow. I don't know, but we'll try to pull something off here on 10:30 The Voice.
We're counting on you.
Trusted local news and talk. See you tomorrow, Tom.